Ooh, I've never actually heard it say that before.
Me either.
This is that interesting. Official. Kinda cool. I know. I was all like, right. What the hell? But cool. All right. So welcome Hello. To New Dimension Comics Presents the Toddcast. I am John. With me as always is Tim. And Tim has fetched some awesome guests, so I will let you introduce your guest tonight, Tim.
Well, the guests kind of fetched me. We've got Perry Crow and Bon Alemanio. Is that correct?
Close enough. That's good enough.
Okay, cool. Perry actually had called me a week ago trying to solicit and get this book, Stud and the Bloodblade, picked up, and I was like, man, you should come on because that sounds freaking awesome, and here we are. So
thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks awesome for being here. On
thank you.
All right, so real quick, some NDC housekeeping. We have our Million Comic Sale coming up next week, where we open all three of our Elwood buildings. They're all a buck a piece, so you have the main Elwood store, main floor, and the basement, which houses over 500,000 sort of dollar books. It's crazy. And they're all a dollar a piece. And then the old store and then the VFW. The VFW actually has about 10,000 new books that were just put in there today, never before seen. So that'll be cool. Everybody can check those out. We do have a couple early bird slots left, I think, for this weekend. If anyone wants to buy that, that's $300. And it secures you a full long box, but it is one person per box. You cannot bring friends to help fill it, as I had to tell someone again today. unfortunately, we do not bend on that rule, because that is the only way you get a long box price for this sale. On Saturday, it will be full, like counting every single book. I'm going to want to not be alive after that. Good thing I'm good with numbers. All right. And then after that, we have our customer appreciation sale later in June. More details on that coming up. I'll have that on the website sometime next week. So something that just happened, though, was our Three Rivers Comic Con Light. That was last weekend. We called it Light because it was outside. It was smaller than normal, and it's a beer joke, because we like beer. So just so you guys know what we're talking about, we took about 25,000 square feet of parking lot and put up a ton of tents and just kind of hung out. It was super awesome, a lot of fun. And we had, I think, close to like 2,000 people there over the course of the weekend, which was awesome. And I'm trying to see if I can find a good picture.
Was there beer also?
There was not beer.
There usually is.
There usually
our
is.
Our thing
yeah.
is that we have an artist make a label, and the owner usually works with like a local company to like come up with like his own flavor or something for that year. And then we'll put the label on, and they'll do a beer party for like VIP and give away like the beer bottle.
Yeah. Nice. That was
yeah,
awesome.
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. We've had,
yeah, I think I have
a lot of people
beer bottles I can show you.
I don't know if I have any in here, but I, like our first year we had, Joe Linsner do a Dawn label. And then the second
year, I got them all.
We had Robert Krause did a beer redeemable with Mark Wade, cause he was there.
Yeah.
Nice.
So show off the Dawn first.
So here's the Dawn.
Yep. Right.
Oh, nice.
And yep. they're all Very still cool. have the beer in them, because I don't drink beer. I only drink like apple teenies. So
that's true.
And then what and was then which blade was
beer,
next, right?
No, Beer Redeemable was next.
Beer Redeemable. Oh my god, sorry. So there was the Beer Redeemable with Mark Wade on the
Mark
front.
Mark Wade's actually on the front wearing the Mark Wade is Evil shirt. Then the year after that, we had Joe Jusko do a Witchblade. And we had Matt Hawkins was there for that. And then the last one that we had in full effect, we had Josh Blaylock do a Mercy Sparks. And actually, that can is signed. I saw the signature. So
it is.
It was awesome. I do have a couple pictures, so I'm just going to bring that up real quick. So here is me at the Aftershock booth with our local guy, Justin. They set up to give away some Aftershock stuff. It was a lot of fun. They're a great publisher. Here's the convention team. That's Dan on the left. He's our convention lead. That's Todd, our owner, who will also be our special guest next week for our 35th anniversary special. And then myself, and that's at my Star Trek group out of Greensburg, the USS Solstice. That is our, that's a captain's chair we built and had a cool backdrop. It was pretty sweet. Giant Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, because why not, right? Here's some people shopping and some more outside goodness. So... a stormtrooper drinking water.
It was a good time. We got a lot of good reception from it. And it was
some cosplayers.
Right off the bat at 10 a.m. It was a line out the door to get nuts. Tickets. So, yep.
Oh, and then this is kind of cool. So Disney Plus sent us a Loki trailer to air in the store. So we had people watching that throughout the whole weekend. So that was kind of cool on a big screen. So,
that's awesome. Got me Jones in for cons. It's been so long. Yeah. It's awesome to see that.
Yeah. It really felt more like a family reunion than anything else. Like everybody was like, oh my God, I haven't seen you in like a year and a half. Oh man, I miss you guys so much. Because last year our show got canceled due to COVID. So we decided to do this year. And we have another one that we're going to do very similarly in October. So October 16th, 17th, we're going to be doing that. Same place, maybe some more tents. So we're going to call it the intense version. So I picked up a couple cool things. This is Shark Squatch number 2. And this is Let's All Die 2, 3, and 4. I already own number 1. These are by Sean Gabarin. With Handwritten Entertainment. He's a local writer. He did the Puppet Master book for Action Lab. He's awesome. And then this is something cool that I didn't get to show Tim. So
you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Like those things, there's like a million of the copies of those things back in the day. And now, now because everyone like recycled them, now they're actually rare.
Right.
When that movie first came out, I remember like, people were over at the dollar bins and like every person would come up with like 2, maybe 3, just like got to get these, throw them up on eBay for 20, 30 bucks. And it was worth nothing for how long.
Right. I only got it because I got it at a deal because the case is cracked. So I have to, I'm going to send it back in. So for like 12 bucks, I'll get it recased. So.
Yeah.
But
is a Shark Squatch what I think it is?
Yes.
Oh my God, that sounds awesome.
Well, whatever you think it is, it is.
It is just as ridiculous as you think it is. How about this?
I'm looking forward to the Shark Squash versus Sharknado.
Or the Shark Squatch NATO. That's really, I may have to pitch that to Sean sometime. Shark Squatch NATO. Damn it, I had something and I lost it. Oh, there were a couple other local creator guys there walking around that were just Pittsburgh guys. Robert Hack was there. He's a great guy. He's known for Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and he's done a lot of cover work for pretty much everybody. And then Ed Pisker, who just had released Red Room. I actually had him sign a ton of copies there. So you can pick one up at your local NDC for cover price, which is awesome.
Maybe. They might be all gone by now.
They may be all in Tim's Tim's house by now.
No, I got one to support Ed. I am not reading that. I flipped through it and I'm like, great therapy for 3 weeks after this book. It is.
Yeah, I had bought all 3 covers that I wanted, including the Jim Rugg variant. So I had Ed sign mine, and then I'm just gonna take my Jim Rugg one to one of our other stores because he shops there. So, or maybe I'll just take it to the Million Comic Sale because God knows he will be there every year. He is there. But also a comics experience letterer, Justin Birch. I don't know if you guys know Justin, but he is a great friend of mine. He shops at our Ohio Valley store. He came on here before and taught us a lot about lettering. Like, I had no idea how involved lettering was and was like, man, this is crazy good. So it was a lot of fun. So,
should we start with Bond so he can give us a little bit about comics experience and what it is and where it came from? And then we can move into the book, because maybe to understand the book, we should probably get the publisher side of it first.
That works.
So, so if you want to give us kind of like a rundown of what comics experience was, what it is now, and what how you kind of fell into all of this.
Sure. And thanks guys for having us, having me, Barry, and just comics experience in general. So extremely long story short, you're familiar with comics experience, founded by Andy Schmidt, former, Marvel editor, IDW editor, used to work on Transformers, G.I. Joe, like so many great properties. He's been running Comic Experience, the online comic school, for years. And it was just getting to the point that we had several publishing partners who we'd worked with, including IDW and Source Point Press, who we brought our comics to. And things sort of just came together, especially with the pandemic, where we started considering, or should I say, because I wasn't part of it at that time, I was away from Comic Experience for like a hot minute, and I could get to that in a second. But I was, Andy basically was considering just publishing the books himself, and through Comic Experience as its own publishing label. And so really that's a short origin of where this started. And you know, we've still got great relationships with people like Source Point, but we sort of came to this understanding that, hey, for the next wave of books, we want to try to go out on our own, really put our name on it, really show that, you know, Comic Experience has this tradition, this history of supporting creator rights, developing up-and-coming creators. We were already educating them, helping to market them, publicizing each other's fund, each other's Kickstarters, and working with other publishers to get them published. Andy was even publishing them through the printer ONS Publishing. So at that point, we had all these pieces in place. So Andy and the team were just thinking, why don't we put these all together and just actually create a real publishing company? And so the result is Comics Experience Publishing. Its first comic was offered for solicit in Diamond with the last catalog by Perry Crow and Jed Daughtry, Stud in the Blood Blade. And couldn't be any happier to be working with Perry and Jed. I mean, this is, and the rest of the team, this is a really great book. The kind of book that I think definitely has its own unique voice. And I think with the state of the industry that doesn't really take a lot of chances nowadays for a lot of very sound economic reasons. we wanted to take that chance, if only because we consider people like Perry and Jed family. And so, you know, let's support, you know, Comic Experience was like, let's support our family and friends, and do what we can to get new fresh voices out there in comics that we think should be out there in the market.
That's awesome.
And yeah, like, again, I just want to thank you guys. You know, Perry was telling me a little bit about like your conversations offline, and you know, retailers are the front lines of especially not just the comics industry, but especially, I hate using independent comics, because at this point I think it feels like most of the stuff that I buy is independent comics.
Same.
Even as someone who used to work at Marvel. And you know, I love Marvel work, and I love Marvel properties, and I especially love the people working at that office. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? There needs to be space created for new creators, new stories, new voices. Sorry, I live in a very noisy area of part of Philadelphia.
That's all right.
And so like we're putting our money where our mouth is, and we're trying to put creators first and let creators create. So, that's you know, awesome. Just again, thank you guys for, you know, New Dimensions killing it in the Pittsburgh area. I'm currently in Philadelphia. I was born in Philadelphia, but
we won't hold that against you.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say. I realized. So I actually have like a Philly shirt on, and I was wearing it all day, and I was like, maybe I should wear this. And so I threw this on.
Nah, baseball, whatever.
No, yeah, we.
If that had been a Flyer shirt, we probably would have had words.
Well, yeah. So what's funny is like the other night I was one of my good friends who still works at Marvel, mm-hmm. he's from Pittsburgh, a huge Penguins fan, and he texts me and he's like, oh man, the playoffs are, that you know, the Stanley Cup is just so nerve-wracking. And I just texted back, I wouldn't know. Because it's like, you know, the Flyers, because the Flyers just collapsed, and yes. So it was like, you know, for a lot of good and bad reasons, but it was just sort of like at one point, and you know, there's so much else going on in Philadelphia, especially with the Sixers and the Phillies, that everyone was just sort of like, what is happening over there? With unless it had to do with Gritty, people kind of there's a bit of a distance that people were having with the Flyers in relation to, you know, the Sixers. And it was like, but yeah, I'm like, I love the Flyers. I frankly have a bad relationship with Sidney Crosby and the Penguins, but at the same time, I'm like, okay.
You're talking to a guy that was born on Mario the Muse's 16th birthday, right? Not even kidding. That's a real story.
Hey, I'm a North Stars fan, and Lemieux just destroyed us. So
yeah, but you got some great players over the years.
Oh, for
Mike
sure.
Madonna's one of my favorites of all time. So
oh, totally.
He's an amazing player. So yeah. I'm still in mourning after last night's game. So
wearing my hat. If you start crying, we won't. We'll just give you a minute then.
All right, I appreciate it.
Swinging back to Kovic's experience. And I don't know, Bon, if you know this, but like over shutdown, Andy actually reached out to us and we had posted and every week shared, hey, you can do these online classes, like check them out. And we have a couple guys that, have went through that in the area. Like I already mentioned, Justin, but also Vito Del Sante.
Mm-hmm.
And the last Baltimore Comic Con, I was going to be on the Comic Hub panel, and it was right after the Comics Experience one. So I just sat and watched it, and it was like those two guys, Greg Pak, Andy, like two or three more guys, like, and they're all just like hanging out on this panel, and it was super great. And I had never seen so many people be so excited about wanting to create comics, and that to me was great. So one of the things, whenever we eventually get our show to become bigger, in a bigger space again, that we actually thought about forming our panels to be more like mini master classes. Mm-hmm. So we were going to reach out. We were kind of in the fledgling stages of talking to you guys about working something like that. And since you're in Philly, maybe you just drive over and do it, and help me out with that. That'd be super cool if you could.
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, that's something that like I've thought about for a while, where it's, you know, how do we, cause also like long, extremely long story short, when I left, I worked at Marvel for several years and then I left and I just pivoted completely to the tech industry for a while. and I actually worked at the University of Phoenix, which is this online educational platform. Yeah. And I just blew my mind just how at that time, this was like 10 years ago, just like the state of online education. And you know, Andy is kind of like a pioneer there, especially when it came to comics, that you know, people didn't need to live in any particular city to get instruction from an expert in comics craft. Like, you know, they could just take a comic experience course. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's one of those things that like I mean, any opportunity that I get to, you know, virtually help people out in any way. Also, long story short, I used to be the talent coordinator over at talent manager at, over at Marvel. And so like a lot of that was like assisting CP Sobalski on talent scouting and things like that. So I got really interested in talking to younger talent about, okay, this is what's going on with you. Where you're like 90-95% of the way. And right. You just need to like turn up these little pieces of your style or your storytelling or whatever, like up to 11 and you're good. You know, we had this phrase in the office, like turn the corner, because literally it was like greatness was just like out of sight. And all they needed to do was just walk like a couple more steps and they could see it. And there are a couple artists that I think, you know, people like me and CB and some of the other editors gave like some advice to, and you could see them like literally in real time turn the corner. And that's awesome. So it's just amazing. Cool. That yeah, like there's so much great talent that like 10 years ago, you know, people like me and the editors introduced to Marvel, and now seeing them as like young gun level, or you know, now years after, like getting poached by DC.
Right. Like was Matt Rosenberg one of those guys?
I think he took on a lot more. He was
in that era, yeah. Though. Yeah, yeah. It was like him and Matt Borak. Right. Yeah, yep. Yeah, yeah. Because they would have came around then. But Frank Gogol at Source Point was one of your guys, yep, that came through Comics Experience. He came on when Suburban Job Volume 2 came on. And he has some really cool stuff that he told us that we're not allowed to talk about, that that I can't wait until that gets announced. That should be soon. But
he
yeah,
does this to me all the time, and then he doesn't even tell me, guys.
I don't tell him.
He doesn't.
I don't.
He's like, I got some good news.
You couldn't be on that night? It's your fault. It's your fault. No, it's fine. So
you know, one thing I'll say about like folks like Frank is that and just in general about Comic Experience is that, you know, it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, people learn from us and we learn from them. And you know, every now and then, like, you know, I'll ping Frank and just be like, you know, just about something I see him doing. Because he's such a great, has such a good mind for marketing.
That's awesome.
And like, you know, I'd just be like, who did you talk to for this? Like, what did you do, you know, for that particular cover or whatever? And it's just, you know, the stuff that he's up to is like really fascinating. And like, I totally applaud him. That man like hustles his ass off.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
He reached out to me during shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were one of the 10 stores that got one of the 10, I guess, quarantine variants for No Heroin number one. It came out like 2 months before the book even hit the shelf. So there were 10 copies totaled out in the wild, and we got one of them. And I was like, he called me and was like, who is it? I'm like, oh, Suburban Job guy. Okay. And, but ever since then, like we've talked a lot. He's a really great dude. And you can tell that he came through, that he's exactly the kind of guy that you're talking about in those, in the way that he cares about becoming and turning that corner. Like, he has that drive and the willpower to stay focused enough to get to that point. And I think that shows through on a lot of Comics Experience guys, or creators, I should say, not just guys. Yeah. There are women too. That's pretty awesome. Like we're big supporters of Comics Experience at New Dimension Comics.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Cool.
Greatly appreciate that.
All right, Perry.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Your turn, sir. What is your origin story?
Man, sure.
Origin story, I guess. You know, I got into comics actually through figures. I think, you know, the Masters of the Universe figures back in 83 when I was like 5 years old, 4 years old, maybe even, and the mini comics that came with the figures. And, you know, at the time, I didn't really think of them as comics, didn't pursue that into starting to collect comics. But, you know, it stuck with me, just the medium and just like this awesome bonus in the figures. But then when I really got into comics was through the Marvel Secret Wars figures in like 87, I think it was. And I just picked up, went to the mall, you know, with my brother. We just bought tons of figures, and we saw, you know, these new Marvel figures, and Daredevil caught my eye, just this bright red figure. And I picked it up, and they had those lenticular shields. I don't know if you remember those, but he's like crude animation, and the art was really cool. And I just pursued it from there and went to a comic book shop and picked up, you know, Daredevil 234, 235, and 236. They were all out on the shelf for whatever reason. And yeah, just got into it. It was really, really awesome. And I was only like 9 years old at the time. And it was a pretty gritty, you know, he's a street level hero, of course. And it started, you know, right after the Born Again storyline, which I'm a, you know, suburban kid growing up in Minnesota. I don't know if I had started collecting any earlier than that, that might have just shattered my young developing mind, seeing all that. I went back, obviously, eventually, and read them, and they're amazing. I mean, the Miller stuff, and so good. But, you know, I just started collecting from there, and just me and my brother and I kind of got into it at the same time. He bought the Spider-Man figure, I bought Daredevil, and, you know, that sort of defined who we were going forward. You know, Spider-Man ended up with 4 titles at once, you know, Web of Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, and Daredevil. I'm like, I can only get this once a month. This is crazy. I can't get enough of my character. But, you know, I just kind of started expanding from there and got into a lot of cosmic stuff. I really like Green Lantern and Silver Surfer, but really just read comics for decades, and actually review comics for, or actually graphic novels, I guess they are called in this context, for Kirkus Reviews, which is like a publishing industry kind of pre-publication review magazine. But then just a few years ago, I work in book publishing for my day job. And, you know, we were looking into sort of professional development and like take a course or whatever. And my wife knew I was into comics. So, and she found Comics Experience online, actually. It's like, oh, you should take this. I'm like, I don't work in comics. I don't know that this is what they want me to take, but I was like, I would like to take this class anyway. So I mentioned it to my boss and she didn't go for it, but I enrolled in the class anyways and on my own dime, and took a comic book editing class with Mark Sumerak as a teacher, who did great run on Power Pack and a bunch of stuff. And so learned a ton through that. And, you know, when you take a class, you get enrolled in the workshop at Comics Experience, and, you know, you get reviews from or critiques from other workshop members, and also like one professional critique per script. And so, yeah, I just kind of started submitting stuff through that. And it just kind of around that time, I was also just really, I don't know exactly what caught my mind or, you know, caught my attention on the He-Man mini comics, but they really stayed with me. And I don't know, I love Barbarian stuff. And I think what's really cool about He-Man and the Masters of the Universe is how it blends barbarians and, you know, rocket ships and lasers, and you got robots and you got a beast man and you got a panther and you got a flying vehicle, and Man at Arms is on a computer and inside of a castle. And it's just like so crazy and so great, and just, you know, just jamming it all in there. And so I wrote like a kind of homage to the mini comics, just an 8-page mini comic called Stud and the Blood Blade. And the idea was really just that it was like, you know, here's this figure, Stud, and he's this barbarian hero, and his accessory is the Blood Blade, and sort of like, you know, the weapon he comes with, like Skeletor and the Terror Claws, or any, you know, the comic was just to highlight this accessory or weapon or whatever. And so I wrote this 8-page mini comic, and I kind of took it as an homage to it. And I really like, you know, Grant Morrison stuff and Warren Ellis. I mean, I don't want to go too far into Warren Ellis, but he's done really cool stuff like Planetary was phenomenal, and Authority, of course. And I think both of those creators do such a good, it's almost like postmodern approach of hinting at these giant sprawling universes, but without sort of walking you through each step. You kind of see the hint of, you know, like Planetary specifically, he's got like the Godzilla issue and the Fantastic Four variant sort of characters. And you understand like the whole universe while just seeing a little bit of it. And Grant Morrison is even more like that, where you don't even necessarily know what's going on, but it's like this really cool meta crazy stuff. So with the mini comic, with the 8-page mini comic, I was just sort of evoking this full universe, sort of like a Masters of the Universe. And in the workshop, in the Comics Experience workshop, people really liked the script and thought it was funny. I mean, I try to put a lot of comedy in it, and but they were like frustrated by the fact that seemed like it was hinting at a larger story, but I was calling it a one shot. No, this isn't a one shot. This is clearly going to continue into some other story. And so I was like, okay, well, people are digging this, so let me kind of build it out more. And I built it out a little more to 14 pages. I don't know why I thought that would be enough, but then it didn't work. That one, they wanted more. So I eventually built it out into basically 5 chapters at about 22 pages a piece and gave it just a full arc. And so that is what eventually became what the series is now. It's coming out as 3 issues, 2 double-sized issues, and then a giant-sized spectacular finale. There you go. Yeah. There's that double-sized debut. That's, I think, a really cool thing, working with CEX, with Comics Experience, with Andy and Bond, and Paul Aller is the managing editor, who had a lot of great notes early on. And I think he gave me notes on that 14-page version, super helpful. Mark Sumerak was so helpful. He gave me critiques on every issue except one, which, long story to why you didn't do that one, but it's so helpful. Kind of like what Bond is saying, like turning the corner, pushing me to kind of, you know, not just like, oh, here's this cool world, but just craft it a little more, not even a little more, but give it more. I feel like just layering stuff on top of other stuff, just feeling, giving a real rich feel. And yeah, these are the main villains of the issue, and they recur throughout the whole series, you know, and again, the He-Man, the MOTU influence. Yeah, I love the names in He-Man, Mecha Neck, yeah. Snout Spout. So here we have, you know, starting in the upper left, we got Sassy Q, who is a female Sasquatch, maybe a Shark Squatch crossover in the future, if you can plant a seed.
I'll see what I can do about that.
We got Roach Coach, who is an insectoid football coach, and he speaks.
And my favorite one.
Good. I had a feeling you might appreciate the sports. And Lavavoom, the, you know, vivacious volcanic Valkyrie. Got Rockstar, you know, 80s rocker made out of rocks and minerals and stuff. Can of Peaches is a sentient can of peaches. That one, it was just sort of crazy. Roswell is an alien, and sort of the mythology of starting the Bloodblade is that it takes place on this world called Ouroboros, which is from mythology. It's the snake eating its tail. And so in Ouroboros, up in the sky, there's a sun being consumed by a black hole. And once that consumption is complete, a giant cosmic snake will shoot out of the black hole and bite his tail, which is in the ocean, bottom of the ocean in Ouroboros, and that will trigger the next bang, which is, you know, the big bang. But I really like science, and I treat science, though, in the sort of, you know, 1960s Marvel sense of science. I take the real loose interpretations of things like gravity waves and, you know, black hole. When a black hole is eating a sun, it's shooting out these gravity waves, which ripple through space-time and just make things crazy. And so there's sort of those elements in the comic as well. So the comic is just big, crazy, fun, certainly like a kitchen sink mentality of just pushing. And, you know, plot wise, it's just, I try to just put as much wildness in there, keep people hopefully entertained. And, but yeah, I'm not sure if I think I veered off of the origin story at some point, but there you go.
No, I'm pretty sure you nailed it, actually.
I think you captured the craziness for sure, because I read the first issue and it was freaking nuts. I was like, this is awesome. Like, the characters were great. The artwork was great. I mean, when I read the solicitation, that it was like He-Man meets the Tick, and I'm a huge Tick fan.
And I'm a huge He-Man fan, so.
And I was just like, it had all the humor of the Tick and had all the cool characters and action. And even in the Tick, they had a lot of, you know, quirky characters as well. Like, I feel like the canned peaches guy would probably be somebody you would see more in like the Tick. So
right.
I thought it was fantastic. I enjoyed it a lot. I felt guilty because you sent me all three of them, and I'm like, I don't want to read all three of them. Like, I want to read the first one, because then I'm then like, you know, in 3 months when they're all out, like, yeah. Oh, I already read those. So like, I felt guilty like jumping in and reading them, but
sure. Sample them as you will. They're there for you when you're ready. But yeah, you don't want to spoil it all. Then there's no more to read. So
yeah,
I did the same thing. I read issue one as well, and I was like, immediately, I was like, this dude's a He-Man fan. Like, but I think my favorite thing of it was that Stud had like mutton chops, and he was like a ginger with mutton chops. And I was like, this is actually, I think, the most improved part. If this is an homage to He-Man.
Yeah, the fashion sense is elevated, we'll say. Yes. But no, Jed, the artist, he and co-creator, he is a phenomenal artist. And it's interesting that you talk about the look, because he did the costumes and just the look, and I feel like he could, you know, be a fashion designer too. Just the way he brought these characters to life is exactly what I wanted, and it's so far beyond what I wanted too. He just elevated it so much. And you know, we met at a comic creator connection at WonderCon out in Anaheim in California, which the comic creator connections, they're at least some comic convention. I don't know exactly how many they're at, but it's sort of like speed dating with writers on one side of a table and artists on the other.
I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen at Chicago. Not the last C2E2, but the one before that. Cause Justin was like, oh, I got to go to this thing. And I'm like, what is it? And he tried to explain it to me. And I was like, and that's pretty much what he said. He was like, it's like creator speed dating. And I was like, okay. And it looked awesome. Like, I'm standing in the hallway with Barry Kitson, like going, what are they doing? This looks so cool. Like, crazy. But it looked like a lot of fun. And I was wondering how you guys mixed creative teams to find the right fits. Now, I guess my question is, do the creators have more of that say of, oh, I like your pitch, I'm going to see what I can throw to you? Or is it a little more on the publisher end of trying to match guys that you got that they think will work better together? I guess that's my question. I don't know if this is more of a Bond question.
Well, I mean, I'll just say this really quickly and then throw it to Perry, that like a lot, our first books that we've solicited, Stud and the Blood Blade and Howling Snow for actually the current solicitation cycle, and then Space Corps in the upcoming solicitation cycle, those were all books that were completed on their own. And we still have like a line of books coming that have been completed on their own. And I mean, I like to tell people that we are looking at the way we've set up this label, this publishing label, as Image. And actually one thing I should bring up too, maybe, is that in our press release, we were very clear that we are not IP farming, that you know, there are a lot of publishers out there that are taking percentages, sometimes huge percentages, of media merchandising rights, and we're taking none of that. and our split with creators is very favorable to creators. They're getting the majority of net publishing revenue. So it's a lot of folks who are coming to us with finished work and basically saying, hey, you know, are you interested to publish this? And we're like, hell yes. And you know, like as we've been you know, announcing our books and you know, announcing ourselves publicly, especially folks that me and Andy and other members of the staff are tied to because of our historic roots in Marvel, and you know, Andy's working over at DC a little bit doing Crime Syndicate. There's a lot of interesting names of people who are coming to us and being like, hey, like we've had this thing that's done.
Right.
And just like we've had other publishers not say yes to it. What do you guys think? And we've had some pretty productive discussions about that. So yeah, like we certainly happy to consult with creators about, you know, if they need some advice on finding like a colorist or a letterer, or if they're a writer who needs to get, you know, if there needs to be something like a creator connection, yeah. Like we can certainly provide that. I mean, that used to be my job over at Marvel, essentially. But at the same time, we sort of want like our default position to be where we're letting creators create. Let's, you know, defer to the creators first. And then if they need help, we'll, you know, let them ask us, or we'll offer ourselves up for help, and we'll give all the best possible advice we can.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
But yeah, like the way that Perry and Jed came together, that's some special serendipity. I mean, that's one of those things where it's like, I mean, it's one of those things where like over at Marvel, it would be like moving heaven and earth to get a team, you know, together like that works yeah. so well, like right off the bat. And like the team for Stub just came together just like that. And I could say the same thing about the other books we've got coming out next with Howling Snow and with Space Corps. It's just sort of like, I think it's just, especially nowadays where I think there's a lot of stasis, mm-hmm. I think with the top companies. And so there's just a lot of great talent that's sort of like just trying to bump up against that mm-hmm. ceiling. And we're there.
Right.
And we're there to help bring those people together who can't, you know, get beyond that ceiling.
Yeah, yeah, I was wondering that, Sam.
The CX or comics experience, however you want to refer to it, it's so useful too. Like the letterer that we have on Stud, Anthony Rella, he's from Comics Experience as well. Like I knew him because we like workshop critiqued each other's scripts and, you know, just got to know each other through that. And he actually has a book. It just can't, I don't know. I know we're going to talk about new comics shortly, but he's got a comic out this week. He came through the Source Point Press Comics Experience deal, Say Squared S. I think it came out this week. I'm on the road, so I got an email from my local comic shop saying it had arrived. So I need to pick it up to confirm that for sure. But yeah, so he's great, and he's really he took lettering classes through Comics Experience, as well as being just a writer, not just a writer, of course, but, and his lettering though is just really phenomenal. It's really art in its own way. You'll see that more and more in the other issues where he just really has a vision for lettering, and it's not just putting, you know, sound effects on the page, but he thinks about it so much and he chooses, you know, just the right effect for the lettering. And yeah, I mean, but I guess just about how, you know, I feel like CEX is changing now. But I mean, the way Stud came about is, you know, to submit a comic for the publication, I'm sorry, or the publishing, you know, wing of Comics Experience, you had to have the script workshopped in the workshop. Excuse me. And then basically we did like the first five pages complete and then had to have the complete script, and then did a full page, just summation of the entire series. And went through, you know, a committee to choose the comics. And so we were fortunate to do that. But then we went and completed the whole series, and now it's coming out. And so it's complete. And so it'll just come out, boom, 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 three straight months. no delays, you know, so it should be satisfying read. And we're doing the double issues, so you get a lot of story in each issue and just $1 more than a regular comic. And so, yeah, I think it's, you know, it should be enjoyable, hopefully, for people.
It was a massive first issue too. Yeah.
Oh, and I should just add that we're definitely still publishing Comic Experience students. That has not changed. We had a town hall with our students and our members a couple weeks ago where we like reinforced that, where, you know, if anything, like, we love that the books coming out of Comic Experience Publishing speak to the teaching methods and values of Comic Experience. So even though we're talking to a bunch of established and veteran creators that me and Andy and company have known forever, we're still like, our starting point is still with the students coming out of Comic Experience. Because again, like, we wanna be that source of up and coming creators and that home for people who want to find each other and get together and hopefully produce something you know, as good as some of the books we've got coming out, like Stud.
Yeah, that was the reason I posed the question is because, like, some of the other indie publishers I've seen, they really kind of only do you have to bring the completed book. They don't, they have a big stable, but they don't try to mix and match better people with things or even really allow those creators to contact each other. Like, they kind of have to do it on their own. But I feel like you guys will make that way more available, if not go like, you know, man, like, this is a really great story. I have a guy that I think will just really fit with this style, or a girl that'll fit with this style, and I really want you to meet, and here's the, like, and just contact them and make that connection for them to kind of help them develop. Because I always feel like if you can find that other person in life that just gels, it will make you a better artist in general. Like, growing up, I played in bands, and, like, you know, when I hit college, I had a drummer that he and I, we were in sync. No matter, like, we were writing pieces, and we would know exactly when the other one wanted to change. We'd know exactly, like I'd be like kind of playing something, and he would just find the perfect beat for it every time, and it was like magic, right? And all the songs that we wrote, like, were very, very good, like that. And they grew naturally. So I just always wondered, and I've talked to, like, Ron Friends about this a little bit, and he said, like, that happened when him and DeFalco got together. It was like, you know, like, they could have just, like, been, they could have made a sandwich and it would have been the best sandwich in the world, right? Because they're just so in tune with how each other worked that's just how they were. And then Pat Olive also worked with DeFalco like that. And those are the fun stories I always liked hearing from veterans. So to hear up and coming people being able to find that almost like the other side of their coin to make it work, like, to me, that says a lot about the label or the publisher, and it says a lot about what you're trying to do to make your guys better, like your stable better. And that is huge to me. And that's what, you know, and with our con, like, it's a big writer, creator, independent thing. Like, we really support comics how they are. We don't do pop culture, TV, movie stars. We focus on comics and creators and things like that. So for us, it's very good to see that kind of thing and support that kind of growth. And, you know, we're definitely happy that we had you guys on here tonight, because this is super cool for us to hear this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you hit on the head. We're like forming these teams. It's like a band, and right. It's like it's always like you know, back when I was at Marvel, that was always like the goal, to form like the perfect band, essentially, that would come together and be greater than the sum of its parts. But it was always like rarer than you could ever hope, and it was more about just kind of creating the environment where those special relationships could come together.
Right.
Yeah, I think, you know, following on that bond too, like, Comics Experience classes, they teach you essentially to be self-sufficient. like comics creator connections. I learned about that through a comics experience class. I've been to cons. I never knew what the creator connection events were or whatever, never heard of them. But then I think Rob Anderson talked about it in a class he and Paul Aller were teaching. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll check that out next time I go to a convention. And yeah, it's so much fun. It's fun just to talk to other creators, whether or not you find the perfect match. You know, it's just, I think, you know, like when you were showing your con photos at the beginning, like it's just so much fun to, I mean, talking to you guys is awesome too. It's great just to have that community. And I think we're all hopefully finally kind of coming out of quarantine and all that. And I'm super excited to get back to cons and yeah, maybe get some cool beers too at a con if possible.
Hey man, you ever make it Pittsburgh way, we'll hook you up. It'll be fine.
Cool. So.
we gotta get stud on one of those labels.
Yes, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. We can work something out. It'll be all right.
A blood ale, you know? Could be good.
Fun fact, all of our beers are always stouts, just so you know. Because we can age them forever, right? Like some of those beers are 6 years old and they're just more potent. Like they're all like 13-14% now. That's all, you know, it's some high test shit there. Right. So
this is good. And I'm blind now. I love it. It's a great beer.
Don't drink it alone. That's our biggest thing is don't try to have a whole one to yourself. Always.
That's why I don't drink them. I'm a lightweight. So John knows.
He has the thimble and then he's already fucked up. It's pretty funny.
It's so. Like one Long Island and then pick me up off the floor.
Yeah. It's really fun though. He's so such a lush. I love it.
When you and Jed were working on this and you saw the images for the first time of what he came up with, was it kind of like what was in your head right away or was there?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was like, yeah, it's hard to even, it was what I had in my head and better for sure. Like I was so excited and that was kind of one of the greatest lessons I learned of working on a comic is you get all this awesome, like developmental art. Like Jed's just sending, I get this stream of texts with all these just amazing sketches. I'm like, yes, oh my God, this looks so great. And then of course he's sending me rough layouts and then pencils and inks. And it's like, you get your own sort of private comic before the comic comes out to everyone. And it's just so thrilling. And, you know, we've been working on this for actually quite a while, like 3 years-ish. I mean, it's been done for a bit now, so we're home stretch and, but yeah, it's super gratifying and he's just such a phenomenal artist and we really clicked. I mean, he, you know, when I was at that creator connection, I made, you know, like a one page overview of the comic and on the back was just like a sample page from the script just to give him a flavor of what a scene would look like. And, you know, he's reading it and he's laughing and I'm looking at his art and it's like, this looks so awesome. So it was a really good fit right away. And, you know, I feel like Jed and I have similar sort of comics DNA. I feel like we kind of have that old 2000 AD kind of vibe, sort of like old Judge Dredd and you know, like the, what is it? The Hobbit, the old animated version.
Yeah.
You know, just that art is so phenomenal. And yeah. And Jed is a huge, you know, Dungeons and Dragons guy and he plays a game weekly game and has done that for I'm sure decades at this point. So it's sort of, yeah, just have really similar backgrounds in terms of what we're interested in and like logo, you know, really nice. big on that. But yeah, so it really, really clicked right away. And I had talked to other artists about Stud. Like I went to a few comic creator connections before I met Jed and, you know, saw some stuff and I was like, well, this is kind of gets the idea, but it's not really what, it didn't grab me. But then Jed stuff was just like, boom, I love this so much. It's just Jed's muscles. He does muscles like nobody else.
Yeah.
So awesome. Good. I mean, if you look at some early sketches of Stud, he's actually like, his costume is a bit more elaborate. And Jed was like, I don't want to have to draw that costume over and over. It was a little disappointing on my end, but his costume still looks awesome. But just, I mean, you know, I guess when you're sitting down to draw it the first time, you're just like, I'm going to just throw everything into this and make it just look amazing. And it still looks amazing. I don't want to take anything away from how it turned out. But yeah, he just, all of the sketches, I still go back and I look at them. And we did a Kickstarter to get money just for like the first issue. It was my first Kickstarter, so I was just sort of testing the waters, and we got it fully funded, and we did like a sketchbook, for a digital sketchbook for Stud, and just collected a ton of Jed's preliminary sketches and layouts, and he kind of talked through his process a bit. And so yeah, it's just he's such a great artist, and just had so much fun putting this together, and really happy with how it turned out, and super stoked to get it out there for everyone to read.
And awesome. It's the first book. So it's the first book for Comics Experience. So that's got to feel pretty good that you're.
Dude, yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Feels awesome.
Like, yeah.
No, Comics Experience has been so good. So much fun to work with, and I've learned so much from them in a way. You know, I guess selfishly, I feel like it's such a, trajectory of like learning coming into the classes. And then somehow a few years later, I get to have the first comic out from the, official CEX publishing line. So yeah, it feels great. I'm so excited, and just looking forward to getting it out to more people and just hearing what everybody thinks.
It's kind of funny. The I was telling Jed the other day in another podcast or video stream we were doing that. I'd run Harris Comics, and then I'd been at Marvel, and just like by the end of it, like, I almost couldn't stand just looking at the comic, because it was just, especially when I was at Marvel, I mean, we were shipping like sometimes like 30 comics a week. So like, you just lose your mind. And just seeing the enthusiasm and joy from Barry, it's been reinvigorating in a way that like, I haven't experienced in comics in a long time. So. Yeah, so
that's awesome.
Thank you very much for that, Barry.
Sure. Yeah, give you.
Yeah,
a little
it totally looked like you were gonna cry a little there, Bon.
I was like, I'll put it this way, that like I left and went into the tech industry for years because I just needed that break from comics. I mean, it's all those things that people say about the comic industry, completely true. But it's like,
yeah, I mean, I love comic books, of course. But I mean, I guess I really got started with art with like comic strips. I would read the morning, funny pages before school, eating my Malta meal, fold the paper up, prop it against the orange juice, container. Just, coming of age with Bloom County and Calvin and Hobbes and Guilty Pleasure of Family Circus. Maybe it's just nostalgia, but I just love really the the cartooning, the art of cartooning, and like, Family Circus, incredibly cheesy, but those like Sunday full or half page issue or installments where it'd be like the Billy is supposed to go get something for his mom, and you see like the dashed line going through the whole neighborhood, and you see all the crazy stuff he got into, and just something about like, here's a very rich page, and here's like you read the details of the story just through like, oh, and here's the dashed line going by a cat, and the cat is like, wow, like freaked out, like, oh, Billy must have startled the cat. And I just love that the sequential art, that the leap your mind has to make between two images or like the implied action of like that dash line, and you see the thing, like the aftermath of what happened. And I love Tintin. I was a huge Tintin fan. I mean, I bought like all the books, you know, years ago. And just the storytelling in that, the visual, you know, language and like the framing, and just love it so much. And that, I mean, yeah, I guess I feel like my passion for comics is just sort of that. I mean, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, but I love even, you know, like hieroglyphics, and just, I like the visual, you know, seeing figures and reading the story. And like I said, sort of making that connection between two images and what changed, and sort of, you know, I guess that's where my passion comes from, is just like the art form itself is so appealing. And I've, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. I've been through some other careers too, and but comics, I've just always loved them. Like I said, art in comics in various forms. And so, yeah, I mean, I haven't been through the grinder the same way as I'm sure a lot of creators have. So here I am dipping my foot into the grinder. We'll see if I can, you know, maintain my integrity through it. But it's just such a thrill to make comics. And I'm just excited, you know, to see where it goes.
Awesome. I'm excited for you because it was an awesome book, and I know we ordered a good bit of them, and I don't think I'm going to have a problem getting people to buy this book at the store. So
cool. Thank you so much for saying that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, if you guys want to hang out while we talk about some new week's comics real quick, and then we'll wrap everything up. We'll try to be quick. I promise. So, so since Tim, you sent me all of these, I'm just going to, share the screen and then just go through them. So I think the year two are first.
Okay.
So,
So Titans Academy 3, the big story is Red X, in the first three issues. Who is Red X? What's he doing? Why is he, involved in, messing with people with this, Titans Academy that the original Teen Titans have started? This issue was really good, but it was all over the place. There was a lot of different moving parts in this issue. But I think the thing that was the most interesting was this new speedster character who's going by the name Bolt, and her origin. And her parents were drug smugglers, and she didn't know it at a young age, and they had her using her powers to smuggle drugs back and forth. And whenever they had crossed the wrong people, the daughter is the one that paid the price, and she lost her legs, and now she has these cool blade feet that she runs on. And I thought that was a really interesting origin story for this new character. And how she has ties to Amanda Waller, and Red X teams up with the Suicide Squad to fetch this girl for Amanda Waller. You're not really sure why. It was fun, but like I said, there was a lot of different pieces that kind of were in play that made it a little bit jumbled. And I don't like Connor Kent being on the Suicide Squad, so
That seems weird. Like,
it is very weird.
How does he die? Like, do they have to use the same kind of bomb? Like,
they had him in the first issue of Suicide Squad, just bound with like kryptonite chains. So, okay. I don't think they really explained if he has a bomb in him or not. But it seems very weird. I know he's had a dark side and has struggled with his identity in the past, but it seems like a weird step back for his character. But overall, I mean, the whole Teen Titans book is pretty fun. So
it's good. Cool. You ready for your next one?
Yeah, go ahead. This one's a quick one. Heroes Reborn 4, Jason Aaron. James Stokoe. If anybody knows, correct me. Sure, you know his art. It's awesome. He's done like Godzilla stuff, but this issue focuses on Dr. Spectrum and kind of his whole origin in this altered universe, and just some really cool artwork. The story is rather basic for this issue. It's the artwork that had me interested more than anything. I mean, you get some really cool scenes, and he's obviously the like Green Lantern type character for this squadron. But it was a fun book. I'm still not sold on how they're doing this story with each issue focusing on a character of the Squadron Supreme, and then the last like 10% of the book being the main story and how Blade is going to set this world right. So I think it's a little weird, and I'm trying to decide how much I like it. But they're both really good books, and The Heroes Reborn has been fun. It's just, like I said, I don't know if you've ever read a book like that or not, but where it's just, hey, here's this big story, but every issue we're just going to do just this one character and then the main story at the end.
You've apparently never read Morrison's Doom Patrol.
I have not.
That was pretty much the entire run. So, but boom, that's some sexy art right there. You weren't kidding.
Yeah. Mephisto. So yeah. You're starting to learn the thing that was very interesting with this issue is finally you're starting to see maybe who is the big player in messing with this universe. I think one of the most interesting things is Phil Coulson is the president of the United States. And he seems to be a bad guy in this and maybe has some ties to Mephisto. But this is Mephisto. And I thought that was a kind of a neat idea. So
that's awesome. That's a really good
and for you guys. For Mephisto, so. Yeah, it's really good art. It's just, I remember I just stared at it a lot. Just kind of sucks you in. No, it just sucks you in. There's like the line work is great, and there's all these little details in there, and you just kind of like, it's almost like you just see something every time you look at it. You see something different.
Okay.
So
I didn't know if you were just got like really baked and just kind of like it freaked you out.
Like, no, but that's a good idea. I should try that.
Get a black light on. Just sit there.
Yeah.
So all right, cool. All right, my first book is Money Shot 11. Christine and the team in the Money Shot are back after a long hiatus. I will also say that this book came with 3 XXX variants that are amazing. Amazing. My favorite was the Tim Seeley one.
I tried to find them, and I was going to do some cool little like blurring out of the things that we probably shouldn't show, but I could not find them. So
yeah, I couldn't find them online. I actually had to take a physical picture and send them to Sora, because I was talking to her about them today. So at this point they're looking for a new team member. They find a environmentalist who wants to grow a ton of seaweed to join the team, who is Dr. Yasmin Blanco. And they, if you've never read this book, it's basically a bunch of scientists who figure out that they can use alien technology to help the world unfuck itself, from like, you know, environmental things, like, economic things, all kinds of stuff, cure disease. And they fund it by basically having an OnlyFans with these aliens. So it's pretty nuts. Oh, they call Dr. Blanco Dominant Gene in this. And then they find out that when they go to this planet to basically to have sex with a ton of aliens to fund this, that she is extremely boring in bed, like to the point where she fell asleep. And they basically have to give her a tutorial on sex with aliens. Like So it's really, really funny. Tim Seeley and Sarah Beattie wrote this. Carolyn Lee Lane does the art, and it is just so good. I don't know if you guys follow Sarah Beattie on Twitter, mm-hmm. but she is hilarious.
And sure. I think Lane was posting about how she took her parents to her local comic shop for the first time, and that they had no idea. And so she has these pictures of like her parents like leaning down into the racks,
right?
And her being like, "What's going to happen next?" And she doesn't say what happens. It's like, but it was like a thrill for her to like put her parents in that position to pick this up.
Oh man, this book is just hilarious. Like, I look forward to it coming out because it's very, very funny, and just the big joke, especially during shutdown, was, oh, you're gonna start an OnlyFans to support yourself. So, which I actually know a dude who did that, and he made $10, but whatever.
I told you, stop telling people about that. I told you in secret.
I will not confirm or deny that it was Tim, but I will tell you it is somebody that works for the company.
That scares me a lot.
Right? Because we're not exactly, you know, Henry Cavill's walking around. So my last book is the new Mr. Miracle book, The Source of Freedom. This is part of the Infinite Frontier line. So they introduce a new Mr. Miracle in this, and the beginning is awesome. Like, he does this awesome escape thing where he falls out of basically like a SpaceX plane and falls to Earth. The things that are weird about it is like he like can kind of like run on air, very similar to like Static Shock, and he's it's a different guy, like it's not Scott Free. And the guy that is him, and they're kind of pivoting with all the icon stuff that they've done recently. And this guy really reminds me of Icon a lot, or the Milestone stuff is what I meant to say. But this guy really reminds me of Icon. And he kind of goes on like a first date with someone, and she has to sign like an NDA before they can even go out because he's a superstar. And then the cool part is the very last page. Like, I was kind of iffy on this book of whether or not I was going to keep reading it. But then in the very last page, the son of Scott and Barda shows up in this awesome armor, and his name is Never Free. And I was like, and he's now challenging him for the title of Mr. Miracle. And there he is, this kind of, after he falls from Earth falls to Earth and gets out of the chains, which was pretty awesome in my opinion. The art in this book is absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
So, but it was fun. It was a fun read. I'm a big Scott Free fan, so it was. His name's Shiloh something is the new guy's name. But that's pretty much that. And that's pretty much our four new books for today. Like, we usually do three, but when we have guests, we try to do two each so that, you know, you guys get more time. And we talk about your book. So therefore, you know, we talked about five books this week. So, but that's pretty much all we got today, guys. So thank you so much for coming on again.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, thank you so very much.
So, and it's awesome to know that, Bon, that you live on the other side of the state, and you have to deal with all the same crap we do in PA. So,
and I'll tell you what,
makes it easy for visiting. That's the real thing. To be like, we're doing a thing. Who can we get? Oh, we know somebody.
So. I'm working on a goal of mine, which is to go to every stadium for a hockey game. Mm-hmm. So arena. I'll have to meet up with you, stadium, arena, sure.
You're only going on Christmases?
We'll have to meet up sometime and you can keep me safe at a Flyers game because I don't know how much they like having Penguins jerseys in there, so
yeah, I would keep that under wraps, but
just maybe just wear like a regular shirt.
I'll put it this way: like the moment Gritty sees you, it's open season. Like, knows what's going to happen next. It's like,
my cousin, who's a big Pens fan, lives by DC, and he goes to Capitals games when they play the Pens, and he basically just has to wear a Pen shirt and keep his jacket zipped up. And then if they start really kicking their ass, like he'll unzip it and be like, yeah. But for the most part, like whenever the Pens will score, he'll be like, yes. And like just kind of hide and be like, did anybody see me?
So I've seen enough fights to know. On the trolley, in the streets. Nope, yep. You can't do that.
Yep.
So
we try to be civil here, though, when they come here.
No, we don't.
I know. I was trying to make us look good. Thanks, Tim. So
well, you don't have to. Our 5 Stanley Cups can do that.
Oh wow.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. That was well done, sir. Well done. So, but again, thanks so much, guys, for coming on. Thanks everybody for watching. Make sure you guys go out and shop your local comics shop, no matter which one it is. We want everybody to support comic stores, and make sure you check out indie books all the time. And now check out stuff from Comics Experience Comics. So it's
And what's the date again for Stud and the Blood Blade?
Last Wednesday of July.
Okay. July 28th.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Yep. So I will keep you guys updated too after it comes out, let you know what the buzz is about it. So
if your local store is a comic hub store, you should be able to go in and order it right now. So cool. All right. Thanks, guys. And we will see everybody next week.
Cool. Thanks, guys.